Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube, game day, Jets-Panthers gets underway at 6 o'clock on TSN 1290.
Get off Twitter, Drew.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome to the program from the Winnipeg Free Press, Ed Tate. Ed, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Our pleasure, Ed. I'm not sure if you got your BlackBerry tuned to Twitter today or not, but there's sort of some controversy between the people of Winnipeg and Evander Kane. At this point in time, is there any benefit for the Jets keeping him, for the Jets allowing him to be on Twitter still?
Yeah, you know, that's a debate I think that every team wrestles with. You know, it's such the social media is such a powerful way for teams and players interact with their fans, but in this case, it's just I don't think it does anybody any good, because you start getting into a kind of an argument through Twitter, and it doesn't do any good. I think a lot of people like the idea that, you know, someone might tweet, "I'm going hunting today," or an athlete might, you know, "I'm eating today. I'm come see me at a car dealership," right, "where I saw autographs." That's one thing, but when it, you know, kind of comes apart and turns into something like this, I don't see who it benefits at all.
You know, Ed, with Kane out of the lineup now, I guess maybe moving on to the on-ice topic, with Kane out of the lineup, it appears that Eric Fehr's moving up to the top line. How do you see, you know, Fehr, the Jets seem to have an abundance of right-wingers and a shortage of left-wingers. How do you see Fehr, you know, for lack of better words, faring on the left side of the top line?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. They've been trying so much to get him going, and then, you know, there's the debate about, you know, can you get a guy going when he's playing third or fourth line minutes? And I think they're just, I don't want to say they're running out of patience with Eric Fehr, but, you know, it's time to start seeing him do what he's supposed to do. The reason they signed him here was because he was supposed to be a finisher, and this team could certainly use some of that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is one of those things where Claude tries to push all the right buttons, and maybe he thinks that if we could get him on the top line, he'll get more time, it'll be with better players, and the production will start to come. But, you know, he's one of those guys that I look at the roster, you look at the lineup and all the guys that are struggling right now to score goals, and, you know, you could probably put him at the top of the list of guys that you expect more from right now.
Ed, in today's Free Press, you wrote a great article about Mark Stewart, and I recommend the article to all of our listeners and readers. You know, he got into the fight on Thursday night with Cody McCormick. You know, and he's been, as you pointed out in the article, number two in the league in block shots behind Josh Georges. What has been, you know, the key to the key to his success? Because he's a guy that, you know, came over from Atlanta, and he's really kind of, you know, developed into the team's top defensive defenseman.
Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys that, watching from afar, I didn't really have an opinion on one way or the other, but the minute you start hanging around this team, you see how much respect he has. And then as the season's gone along, man, you know, win or lose, he's one of those guys that's always in the locker room to speak with the media, which, of course, puts him in the good books with me. And then he's just, you know, if you went from stall to stall in that dressing room and asked who's the office guy or who's the leader, you know, you're going to get a variety of different answers. But I think almost everybody would put Mark Stewart on the list. And so I don't know what the key is, but he's a glue guy. He's one of those guys that you just, you know, I know Boston had a lot of those kind of players, and that's maybe why they moved him in that package last year. But, you know, you see him play and you think, boy, if he had stayed in Boston and Chara wasn't there, he might have been their captain. He's just that kind of player that's, I think he gets the most out of his talents, arguably, of anybody on this team.
You know, leadership's an interesting topic, Ed, and I'd agree that, you know, it seems like that leader, that emotional leader, has been Mark Stewart. Who would you say are the other leaders on the Jets?
Well, you know, it's funny, when we were talking to Mark Stewart, I talked to him over the course of a couple of days for that article, but, you know, someone asked him about leadership yesterday in the scrum, and one of the first things out of his mouth was, this is Laddie's team, meaning Andrew Ladd. And, you know, so I think that Andrew Ladd is wearing the C for a reason, but, you know, it's some of the veteran guys like Chris Thorburn, Ron Hainsey, The guys that have been through it a little bit before with this team, you know, and then you know, I know Tobias Enstrom wears the assistant captain A, but you know, he's not a vocal guy. Dustin Byfuglien's a leader in a different way, and you know, kind of keeping everybody loose. So Jim Slater, I think they have a really good room in that regard. They do seem to have a lot of guys that can speak out, and when they, you know, that have respect of other people. And it's a good blend because you do have a lot of young guys, too. They're still trying to figure out what it takes to be an NHLer. But, you know, it's one thing to have a collection of guys like that. You guys were talking about it earlier. I think the biggest issue with this team is that you need got a lot of character, and now you need more skill.
Mm-hmm. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press. Ed, do you think we're in a sort of bizarro world where concussions and head injuries are talked about freely, but a guy who has a lower body injury, that's treated as if it's a state secret?
You know what? That's a great point. You know, I still laugh at this upper and lower body injury thing. And you're right. You know, the most serious of all kind of injuries or concerns always are the concussions. And yet, a guy takes a shot off the foot, and it's referred to as a lower body injury. I don't know why that is. Why you can't be specific about it. You know, it used to be that, you know, in football that you wouldn't want to say what the guy's injury was because then the defense would come after it and, you know, try to target it. And that, you know, so then in hockey you say that a guy has concussion. Isn't that kind of, you know, you may as well skate around in a red jersey. So, you know, it's a touchy thing. I'm not sure that anybody knows how to handle all this or how to resolve all this, but I'm just glad there's more awareness of it. You know, the minute Evander Kane walks into the office there yesterday and says he has a headache, I'm sure the alarm bells went off, whereas, you know, maybe even 5 years ago, someone would have given him a couple Tylenol and said, get back to us later.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And remember, 3 weeks ago, we even had the famous mid-body injury with Alexander Burmistrov. I'm not really sure what that means, but...
Yeah.
You know, moving along to Zach Bogosian, it was confirmed that he'll be in the lineup today, and Tim Stapleton and Evander Kane will be out of the lineup. Can you just confirm that Patrice Cormier was recalled and he's, you know, obviously, you know, had time to get here? What was the process? Because I imagine he was recalled late last night or early this morning.
Yeah, the Ice Caps announced last night after their game that he was being recalled, and apparently what happened is that He got to Minneapolis and then had to stay overnight. I don't know if it's because of the weather or what, or if he just missed a connecting flight. So he's supposed to be in the lineup tonight. Zach Bogosian is going to play. We talked to him today. He's dying to get in there, and I think they've really missed him. So I'm interested to see both these guys play because I don't know about you guys, but I like Cormier way back even in training camp, and you could certainly make the case that he shouldn't have been sent down.
Yeah.
And I like what he does because he's, you know, he's kind of, as Claude Noel would say, he's a heavier guy. He doesn't get pushed off the puck. And when he was called up here recently, he was great in the faceoff circle. So, you know, those are a couple elements that this team could certainly use.
I agree, Ed. I thought he actually stood out quite well in the preseason. You know, moving to another player who's, you know, seems to be polarizing really with fans, Alexander Burmistrov, you know, where do you see him at in terms of progress? And do you think, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, do you think that the Jets' hand was kind of forced in that they seem to want to develop their players in junior and in the minors, and with Atlanta throwing him into the lineup last year, they really seem to be at a point where he's 19 years old, but they don't want to really send him to the minors because they don't have scoring and there's a contract issue. And does it seem like their hands kind of been forced with this development?
Yeah, you know, I heard you guys talking about him earlier on the show, and you're right. It's almost like they're not sure what to do. You know, you can see the skill. You can see, and he's a much better defensive player than I think he gets credit for. But he seems to do an awful lot of stuff on the perimeter, and you look at his numbers. You know, he's got 8 goals and 9 assists, and, you know, he's bounced all over the place. It's like they can't find the right line or the right partnership with him. He did work well with Nick Antropov, I thought. But you're right, it's kind of a little bit of a mystery with Alexander Burmistrov because you see the skill set, and yet the production still isn't there. We all thought early in the year that maybe he was taking that next step, but I would say he's plateaued. And if it wasn't because... If he wasn't such a good defensive player, you know, there'd be some real concerns. But at least he's managing that end of the rink. So that's a weird one because they could certainly use him, use some more production from him. And, you know, you start to debate, is he a top six forward or not? Well, if you just look at the numbers, he's not. So then what do you do with them? And, you know, they're kind of stuck. And I think that they're just hoping that sooner or later he'll get it all figured out and get comfortable and find the right line mates. And, you know, and then the puck will start going in the net and the points will pile up. But kind of a strange one. And, you know, I've been watching him all year and waiting for that, you know, the light bulb to go on, so to speak. And, I can't really say that it has so far.
And, you know, this team seems to have majority of its core players signed through at least next year, if not longer than that. Two players who are coming up on UFA status, but, you know, aren't the major, you know, blockbuster player. Jim Slater and Tanner Glass. It was written about in the Free Press, I think, this week. Do you see either, you know, either of those guys, both of those guys, maybe re-upping prior to the end of the season?
I would think that the team would approach those guys and get it done. Every team needs those kind of guys. Slater's, you know, everybody knows about how good he is in the face-off circle, and Glass is just a character guy along the Mark Stewart lines that, you know, is there win or lose and has always got his teammates back. And the interesting thing about this team, and you guys were talking about it earlier, is that they seem to have a lot of the same thing when you look at their forward lines. And you've got a lot of guys, you look at them and say, he's probably not a top six guy, but he's a third or fourth liner. Well, you can say that about a lot of different guys on this team. So, you know, can you have too much of the same thing? Possibly. And so, you know, when the trading deadline comes, you know, as much as I would keep both of those guys, if the right offer came along, why wouldn't you do it? Because, you know, we talked about Cormier, and, you know, he could play sort of the same game as some of these guys, and I'm sure there's guys in the minors too. You know, Tanner Glass was out there in free agency. Those kind of players are available. I'd keep them because they're character guys, but there's no guarantees now, you know, that they would be here beyond this season.
Ed, after tonight, the Jets play 8 of their next 9 on the road, 6 in a row, broken up by the All-Star game, of course. We were speculating, you know, a .500 record just so that they tread water coming into that big 7-game homestand at the sort of towards the middle end of February. Would you agree with that assessment, or do you think they need to, you know, win more than just 50%?
No, I think you're bang on. I was talking to Tim Campbell about this the other day. I look at that game February 16th in Minnesota. It's sort of the end of a long stretch of mostly road games. There's a couple home games in there, and then there's that long homestand. So to me, if they're sort of where they're at right now, even going into that homestand, then that has to be considered progress. And to me, you're right, that would be treading water going .500 on the road trip. You know, you guys have talked about it a lot during the show already, but this division kind of really stinks, and so they have a chance here to, you know, just imagine if you finish first in this division, all of a sudden you're not even talking about the eighth or ninth spot. You're the third ranked team going to the playoffs. I mean,
right. Yeah.
How goofy would that be for given what's gone on with this whole division? So I look at who they've got coming up. Carolina's probably a winnable game. The Rangers at Madison Square Garden's tough. Philly's tough. Tampa's kind of weird this year. A big disappointment. That's winnable. Florida's winnable. Montreal's a mess. Washington's been a disappointment. Pittsburgh's tough. Yeah. Minnesota's really gone down the toilet since the Jets beat him in December. So there's a pile of games in there that you would, you know, put a little check mark by and say that, you know, this is a team that the Jets could beat. And if that was to happen, if you were to even go better than .500, then I think that it'd be in a real good spot for the stretch run.
And I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here. I usually don't do it. We're about 4 weeks away from the trade deadline here. Are you hearing of any trade rumors around the MTS Center? And are there any Jets maybe that other teams are looking at, or is it basically quiet on the Chevy front?
I talked to Chevy yesterday for a story for next week about this stuff, and it was more about strategy and what you do and how you approach the trade deadline. Of course, he's not saying a whole lot. You know, they have, I think, that they're the best, you know, asset the Jets have right now is that they have a lot of, you know, quality defensemen.
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
You know, there's 7 or 8 guys here. So that, you know, everybody wants a defenseman at the trade deadline. And I think that Winnipeg could be a seller in that regard. You know, everybody wants another top six forward, and Winnipeg could use 3 or 4 of them, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that they're really going to stick to the blueprint, and this will be a test of it going into the trade deadline, because you can get kind of You know, if you can trigger happy, if you see the rest of the division doing something, you know, you don't want to kind of veer away from your core values and what you want to build just because Florida made a move or Washington made a move. You know, I think this will be a real test to see what this team's all about and their approach. But I'm not hearing a whole lot of rumors. I would just expect that I think they'll take some phone calls, they'll make some phone calls, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least if someone was moved. And I, you know, the name that I would throw out, and I hate to do this because it's just rumor and gossip, but that's what we do.
Yeah.
I would say Johnny Aduya might be an attractive guy at the deadline because he's got some skill offensively, and everybody's looking for that guy that can make the stretch pass and can carry the puck out of his own zone. And
yep.
So that's a guy that I would say would probably be a player that the Jets might get some phone calls about.
Yeah, and a pending free agent as well.
Exactly. And so that, you know, that makes him, you know, let's face it, if you were to circle a bunch of the names on this team that you would think this is who they're going to build around, I'm not sure that number 29 gets his name circled.
Right. And the second best asset going for the Winnipeg Jets is that they have season ticket holders under contract for 5 years.
Now, that's a big point of it. Yeah, you're right. It's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I don't think the Jets need to do anything now. I don't think that they have to go out and do what Florida did in free agency. I'd like to see them augment some things. But let's face it, the teams that are winning in this league, by and large, do it through the draft.
Yep,
so
yep.
If that's the blueprint they're taking and that's what they said they are, then this is where you have to be patient because you can't get caught up in, oh, my God, everybody else is making a move. We better do one, too, because those are the trades that could screw you for years.
Exactly. We're going to talk about that actually coming up. I don't know if you read Elliot Friedman's article on the CBC website earlier about the buyer beware when it comes to free agency.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, let's look at Florida. At the beginning of the year, I didn't like anything that they had done, and then I thought, wow, maybe Dale Talon's a genius there in November, but now it's starting to kind of settle down again, and
yeah.
It's just, you can't buy a championship in this league. I really don't think you can.
Exactly right. Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks very much.
All righty, Ed. See
you
later.
Ed.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ed.
Let's go to break. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press for
great
joining
guy.
Us. If you missed any of the interview, it will be available on iTunes.
Great interview.
Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, from the Globe and Mail in Vancouver, David Ebner is going to join us.
Took over for our good friend Matthew Sakaris.
That's right. So David's the new Vancouver guy, so we're going to talk Canucks hockey with him coming up in about 10 minutes' time.
Always a pleasure to talk to Ed Tate.
Exactly. In the interim, I want to talk about the article that we briefly mentioned with Ed,
yes.
And that's the...
Yep. Mark Stewart?
No, not that article. Well, that was a good article also.
No, that was in today's paper.
Yeah, the yeah. Elliot Friedman article from the CBC website. I thought that was he did some research into really the last big free agent signings.
The trade deadline.
No, not at the trade deadline. It's about unrestricted agency signings and how people always pay for offense, it doesn't come as a surprise.
And Friedman says it usually doesn't work out.
He says that usually when a player moves from one city to another after signing a big unrestricted free agency contract,
yep.
forwards at least have a worse rate of return than defensemen do.
When you sent me that article yesterday, I read it, and Elliot Friedman's a great journalist, and it's surprising, Richie, the one forward... He. By the way,
I didn't find it that surprising.
He eliminates some guys, but one of the only guys that actually had a better offensive season was Scott Gomez.
Why don't you toss out names, Drew? Because give people context of what we're dealing
sure.
with here.
Sure. We're talking about the guys. I mean, he studied. He went back from 2006 to 2011. He found the five players who signed the largest contracts in unrestricted free agency.
Okay.
So usually they're guys who
Kovalchuk.
Yeah, guys who generally they haven't necessarily moved cities, but they've had freedom to go wherever they wanted.
So Briere.
The Ilya Kovalchuks, the Danny Briers, the Chris Drurys, the Scott Gomez's.
Somebody's going to toss it all Glenn Sather contracts from mid-2000s or what?
Pretty much. I
Bobby Holik.
Yeah.
Chris Gratton.
Mark Savard, Ville Leino this past year, Brooks Leitch, that sort of thing.
Like, Mark Savard's a hard one to... I mean, I know he talks in the article about his numbers going down, but you also have to understand he went from a system under Bob Hartley, which was offense, 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 and favored veterans, to one that he went to Claude Julien, which was complete and total... defensive system, and he rolls four lines. And, I mean, the context is also important there.
And then also the concussion.
Well, here's the number. What he found is that a forward scoring pace will drop in year one. So moving into a new city.
But also, let me cut in there for a second.
Okay.
Forwards don't peak. Generally, unrestricted free agents become unrestricted now at 25 or 26. That's right around the end of their prime. So are they tailing off because of the contracts? Are they tailing off because that's the age?
Well, and that's a very good question to ask as it relates to unrestricted free agency. You have to, we're saying buyer beware.
True.
I have to approach with caution. So, you know, 17 of them scored at a lower rate than the year before. Some of the drops were negligible, you know, Mark Savard. Others were pronounced, like Ilya Kovalchuk and Billy Leno this year.
The questions are, I mean, are they playing as much time? Who are they playing with?
Yep.
It's very context-dependent. And I understand Elliot's point, and I think it's probably valid to a point. But there's so many factors that go into something like this. I mean, Billy Leno goes to Buffalo, sure, but everybody thought that was a terrible contract. So is it the contract, is it the contract that he's playing poorly, or is it he's not playing with Hartnell and Briere anymore?
I think that you're onto something, and I would agree with you. I'm not saying you're disagreeing with
Freeman. No, I'm not disagreeing
with Elliot. With your two points, I think it's more about the context of the... When you look at Danny Briere, he had his best years with the Sabres. He's the man in Buffalo. In Philly, he doesn't have to be the man. There's a lot of good players.
Exactly. He's behind Carter and Richards. He's behind Giroux right now. He's never the number one center. So his numbers aren't going to reflect. His numbers are going to reflect that.
When you look at the Elliot Friedman article,
you have to put it into context.
You have to put it into context. And what you take the most out of it is that the year after, especially forwards, the year after they sign a big contract, it's almost less than 5% that a guy is going to have a better year.
Yes.
And that's undeniable.
Strictly stats-based. Let's look at Brad Richards. Brad Richards is on pace for the lowest full-season total of his NHL existence this year, 57 points.
Okay.
That's what he's on pace
Yet the team is doing
for.
Well. It doesn't have to be the guy.
Well, but they brought him in for offense. New York couldn't score last year. Would you say that New York would be disappointed in Brad Richards' performance?
No.
In year one of his free agency, of his new contract with the Rangers.
I'd like to see more, but obviously the team is playing at a certain level right now. And Brad Richards is going to try and roll with him significantly in the playoffs. Now, you have to understand who he's playing with, Drew, too. I mean, he's logged some time with Gabrick.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's playing with right now. I haven't seen the Rangers playing a little bit. But in Dallas, he was playing with guys, speedy wingers like Louis Erickson, Snipers. I know Gabrick is somewhat like that. They're not exactly the same player. But overall, I mean, he's going to have more offensive responsibility on a poor team and a little more wide open of a style. And
in Dallas, which you're saying, whereas New York is a way better team, obviously.
I mean, you're playing for Mark Crawford, who's a very offensive coach.
In Dallas.
Yeah, so, I mean, that needs to be taken into account, too. Again, so the coach you're playing for, and he's played for Tortorella before, but there's so many things. Is he not playing as well as they thought he would? Probably not in terms of points. They'd probably like to see more like 65 or 70. But overall... I mean, what did you expect? You didn't expect him to come there and get 90 points, did
you?
No.
But
so that's another thing.
But, I mean...
He's 33. How old is he?
He's old.
Early 30s.
And they signed him to a big... Is he 31, 32, something like that? They signed him to a big contract. I mean, Elliot says pretty much in a nutshell is, you know, teams generally overpay for offense...
Yep.
And they generally...
Well, first of all, teams generally overpay in unrestricted free agency. That's the first thing that needs to be said.
Yes.
Please see Ilya Brizgalov.
Of course.
So, yeah, Brad Richards was born in 1980, so he'd be
31,
almost 32.
32, exactly.
32 on May 2nd.
But, I mean, he's saying the numbers show that if you think that by signing a guy is going to instantaneously boost your offense, the numbers don't bear that out.
Right.
And that's important for fans and, you know, and team. I mean, look, I know that teams probably, or if they don't, God help them, should realize this. But fans should really use this as a cautionary tale for immediately thinking that go out, spend a boatload of cash in free agency, and that's going to be the cure to all your problems.
Well, it's funny, Richie. You know, we had Jason Ferris on last week who basically has put together a terrific book on NHL
just got it yesterday, by
general
the way.
Managers. And then, you know, when you start to factor in the money ball and how really money should be allocated based on how valuable a player really is. That's what money ball was all about, right?
That's right.
And when you think about what unrestricted free agents coming next, Zach Parise, and you think about, okay, what should a guy like Zach Parise get? How much should he get per year? How many years? Factoring in everything that Drew has read that was in Elliot Friedman's article, I still think there's a good possibility you're going to see a 6 or 7 year deal for Zach Parise at $7 to $8 million a year. And
I agree.
It's quite possible that Zach Parise is not going to have 94 points like he did 3 or 4 years ago, and he might just be a very don't get me wrong, I love Zach Parise more than anybody. He's a tremendous hockey player. He might be a guy that gets 70 to 80 points from here on in, but he'll make more money than he's ever made. That's just because he's that valuable, and there aren't a lot of Zach Parises in the NHL. You're going to still see these guys sign for big money. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just it's a good article about the cautionary tale.
But let's look at this paragraph. I mean, following the 2010 contract, Saga Kovalchuk had the worst season of his NHL career. Even as a rookie, he had a better points per game average. Okay, true. But New Jersey was a complete and total mess because nobody was playing for John McClain. Then they brought in Jacques Lemaire.
Yeah.
He played in Atlanta for John Anderson, offensive coach. Bob Hartley, offensive coach. So, I mean, it's an adjustment in terms of the system. And so there's countless factors that go into this, and I'm not saying that money isn't a factor. It probably is, but it's hard to attribute just how much percentage of, you know, out of 100%, how much is attributable to contract, where, you know, as opposed to other factors.
Well, I think when you make your free agency decisions, your unrestricted free agency decisions, you strongly have to consider the kind of style you're playing, and if the guy that you're going to go throw big money at, you have to consider, does he fit into the system?
He discounts the players who weren't going to really leave anyways.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I would say maybe that's the best ones to look at, because they're in the same situation,
right,
but they now have the burden of the contract.
Interesting. Well, why don't you do that?
I'm working on another article, Drew. I mean, I'm trying to do this Evander Kane thing for Monday.
You have a big article about Evander Kane coming out on Monday. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. You can find that on illegalcurve.com.
It's something you get into.
There you go. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. When we come back on the other side of the break, David Ebner from the Globe and Mail in Vancouver is going to join us. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program from the Globe and Mail in Vancouver, David Ebner.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. How are things out on the West Coast?
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me. The day is pretty good. It's warm again. It got cold, relatively cold for Vancouver the last couple of days. I know it's nothing like Winnipeg. 5 degrees gray, maybe a bit rain later today. Just kind of an ordinary January day.
Yeah,
and unusually, a matinee here, the San Jose Sharks puck drop in about an hour. I know the Canucks had that one 2 weeks ago. I guess everyone took notice of that game in Boston. But yeah, matinees are relatively rare here in Vancouver, so it should be fun.
It sounds like it will be. I'm confident it won't be quite as controversial as that game was in Boston a couple weeks ago.
Well, you know, you'd expect, though, for it to be a little heated. I know they didn't hate each other last year, but they did play in the conference finals, so San Jose is one of those teams that has made it deep in the playoffs a couple years in a row, but hasn't made it, right? And so the Canucks are, quote, in their way, so we'll see what happens this afternoon.
Absolutely. Vancouver's currently sitting in the second spot in the Western Conference based on their Northwest Division leading record.
Yeah.
Canucks sort of an interesting team. You know, they started off the year pretty middling, I'm going to say. And then
9-9-1 exactly in the first 19. Yeah,
exactly. Then they had that tremendous hot streak where they were, I mean, I'm sure you know the exact record better than I do. And then they back to sort of being a middling team again. You know, what Canucks team are we going to be seeing for the rest of the year? You know, the dominant team or the middling team?
Well, I think the better team. I think, you know, are they pacing themselves? I don't think it's conscious like that. But they obviously got up for the Boston game, and they did not get up for the subsequent Florida and Tampa games, or really the L.A. or Anaheim games either. It's just all recent ones. But, you know, I think they're ever more a veteran team, and I think people still underestimate the seedings. Look at the guys. They're at the top of the scoring list again. And they're 31, and they've been to the Cup Final. They've been to Game 7, and they want to win the Cup. So I think the veteran leadership on the team is stronger. Luongo's playing pretty well, but not quite as dominant as last season. So I think that's one factor in terms of the Canucks not leading the league by a big stretch like they did last year. And now, this year, it's actually a little, the Canucks have played a few more games than a few of the other teams. On a points percentage basis, they're an eighth. But I think that just testifies that the league's quite competitive. Just think, Anaheim and LA were here recently. And if you look at where they are on the standings, you think those should have been guaranteed wins, but not at all the case.
David, you know, obviously controversy struck recently with Elaine Vigneault's comments about Ryan Kesler, who's you know, hasn't obviously matched the season he posted last year. Can you talk about, you know, the reaction that had elicited in Vancouver, and just give us kind of give our fans an idea of what exactly is going on between the two of them?
Yeah, you know, it's actually the reaction is probably the most illustrative of the whole thing. So, of course, after every game, there's coaches' press conference and players talk as well. Vigneault made some pretty general comments about Kesler and just kind of how he needs to step it up a little bit, but not harshly, I don't think. But then Vigneault's comment was translated through a reporter. I rarely blame the media, but in this case, it does seem like a little broken telephone. You always hear teams say, oh, the media. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it does seem like a little media broken telephone. And so the comment was relayed to Kesler. Kesler, who is a bit frustrated, he scored 41 goals last year, I think, and he has 12 now, so not quite the same season. He's coming back from injury. So he was a little annoyed, and there was some friction. And I think the episode is as illustrative of the standards for the team itself and then the city are super high. Game 7 of the Cup Final, the only goal is to win this year. And so a slump of a couple games, Kesler's not scoring like he did, it's rattling people a little bit. But they seem like pros, you know. I mean, every team's a pro, but they seem, to me, it was an extremely minor episode. And local papers jumped on it for a little drama. It seemed dramatic, but I think it was much ado about nothing. So a little agitation. Mm-hmm. They want to win every night, like everybody. But they really do have the potential. And so I think the episode, the whole episode, is illustrative of that. It's kind of funny. It was really much ado about nothing. It's a fairly drama-less team in terms of writing about it. It's kind of boring in a way, but it's all right.
Okay, David, I'm going to bring a little drama then. You mentioned Roberto Luongo before, and you know, for the past few years now, Corey Schneider's been the backup for Roberto Luongo, and obviously Roberto Luongo's got the big contract. He's not going anywhere. Now, I'm not going to ask you whether or not Corey Schneider's going to be traded, because you know, I know fans of the Canucks have been, you know, debating that for a long time now, and Corey Schneider is arguably having his best year in the NHL. So the question for you would be, what are the options with Corey Schneider? Because obviously, you know, he's a huge asset for them, and the Canucks are, you know, blessed to have two really good goalies. So what are the options for Mike Gillis with Corey Schneider?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's 100% a given that Luongo's unmovable. So there's one option. Make Schneider your starter and trade Luongo and see what you can get, right? But, I mean, they wouldn't trade. First of all, that's an extremely difficult trade. Obviously, it's not my number one scenario, but that's possible. But, yeah, the more probable is he's a restricted free agent next year,
right.
Corey, and $900,000 he makes. How much can you pay your backup goaltender is the question. They definitely seem to want to keep him through this playoff run. I think that's going to be valuable. But some sort of move will happen. It's hard to see Luongo going, so Schneider gets traded, I guess. Try to get as much for him as possible. He's having his best season for sure.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Beat Boston. I don't know. It's hard to imagine it unfolds in whatever the next 40 days for the deadline. That would leave a pretty big hole. I think Luongo is very solid, but obviously he has his off days, as he showed in the Stanley Cup and other times. So it would be crazy to trade Schneider now, it seems like. So it's a little theoretical with so many things can happen in between now and when that might happen. So it'd be interesting if they kept them, though, right? So it's intriguing, but it's much less likely, right?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined on the line by David Ebner of the Globe and Mail. He covers the Vancouver Canucks.
David Booth is an interesting player. The Canucks acquired him earlier in the season, a player I've always liked to think is quite a talented player. He came in and then he tried to get acquitted with the team, and of course he got injured right away. He's back now. Where do you see his game at now, and where does the organization maybe see his game at from 20 games from now?
Well, I think everybody, including himself, hopes he keeps on scoring like he did against the Kings in his second game back. He was one of three names on one of the local blogs whose salary, in theory, is maybe higher than he's actually worth on the ice. Keith Ballard, the defenseman, often cited.
Sure.
It was in the context of the coming trade deadline. Granted, they just got him in October, And then the knee injury, which put him out, a knee-on-knee against Colorado, put him out for 18 games. He kept he stayed out a couple extra games at the end there just to heal up perfectly, which I think is a smart move. The local press was a little bit like, well, why is he not coming back? He's ready to go. But he scored right away, pretty much. He has to score. He's supposed to be a second-line a second-line forward, which is a lot in the NHL, and he gets paid numerous millions of dollars. But I think he has the potential. If they keep that second line as, like, the kind of American Express line, he's from, I think he's from Michigan.
Michigan.
And then Kessler, and then Higgins. They had a couple of really great games late November, early December, before Booth went down. So that's what they hope, obviously. I guess it's obvious. Every hockey team hopes all their great potential players play well. But he has to produce. It's hard to imagine him getting traded so quickly as this coming trade deadline.
Right.
But if the Canucks are going to roll, he has to score more. Grant, he was out for a while, right? So put a goal in the other night. I like him. He seems to found his rhythm and seems to fit in quite well. He likes the speed of the team. Maybe he can really deliver. And if the Canucks are going to win, that's a name you'll hear more, I think, I'm pretty sure, in terms of goal scoring and making a difference.
David, you know, to no one's surprise if we ended up seeing another Boston-Vancouver Stanley Cup rematch. In fact, I think most people would love that, given the game a couple weeks ago.
But I don't know if it's for sure, right? But anyways, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, certainly not for sure. I mean, lots can happen. Have the Canucks added enough truculence, you know, to quote Brian Burke, to prevent the Sedins from being worked over like a speed bag as they were in last year's Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, well, no, they haven't. Because they haven't tried it, or if they've tried it, haven't produced any results in terms of adding that heft. I mean, it's a divided opinion thing. I don't think you can exactly use the game a couple weeks ago as a benchmark, because stuff that Vancouver was getting on to power plays might not be called in the Stanley Cup final, right? And so I don't think that 4-3 win is a perfect example of Vancouver can now overcome Boston. That all said, we have to remember, they blew the 3-2 lead, the 2-0 lead, but they were in Game 7 against Boston. Like, they were already holding their own, and it seemed like, yeah, they need a bit more toughness. But Gillis just isn't adding it. He hasn't going for it. And it'll be interesting on this deadline. If you put some odds, you'd think he will try to go for something tougher at this deadline. That seems like something that could help carry him that final distance.
Well, David, the good news is if Vancouver ends up losing in the Stanley Cup Finals, Canucks fans have shown that they'll celebrate whether they win or lose.
You know, it's that June night, you know. That riot was already starting. It would have happened either way. It's kind of a stain on the civic reputation, but I wonder if lesson learned eventually here.
Well,
there's been quite a bit of ongoing shaming. A whole, like, 1,000 new photos have been released by the police just the other day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I obviously we don't want to talk about that because, I mean, you know, it's a small minority, and it always seems to be. But, I mean, has the city, you know, prepared if it happens again? The Canucks are, as long as the Canucks are going to be good, I suppose it's always in the back of everyone's mind, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be the headline story is if the Canucks get close, you know.
Yeah.
I'm all in favor for the public celebrations, and it was amazing on those nice June nights. Having so many people out there, that was really cool, but obviously a disaster at the end. I wonder if it goes so far as to not have those live outdoor sites. I know the mayor likes them, mm-hmm. But they'll be curtailed to an extent. And there was just so much booze, like, especially younger fellows. I mean, we were all younger fellows once too, right? But just way too much booze, and the cops could crack down on that a little bit more, and I think it could come off nicely, you know. It's not really a rough and tumble city. I mean, it's port town, but not really. It's not Philadelphia. It's not Boston.
Yeah, it's not
right. It's not even Winnipeg, right? Like, I mean, it's not really a riotous city. So I think curtailing the booze a little bit will prevent a future riot, hopefully.
It seems like a reasonable policy to put in place. David Ebner from the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Canucks this afternoon. Enjoy today's Canucks-Sharks game.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, guys. And go Jets, I mean, in a just a general positive way, but it's cool to see the Jets they got a great home record. Obviously, need to win a few more games on the road there.
Absolutely, and I think they got the opportunity. Is it February or March where they're in Vancouver? I'm not sure which, but
I forgot to look that up, actually. But yeah, coming up.
Yeah, that'll be always an interesting game when the two Canadian teams meet. David, thanks very much again.
Thanks a lot, David.
Yeah, likewise.
Take care.
Guys.
Yeah. David Ebner from the Globe and Mail, you're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to David Ebner of the Globe and Mail. In case you missed that interview or any of the program, you can find us on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Who should I start with? I'm going to start with Ezra Ginsberg today because he sent it in to me earlier.
I'm glad we're bringing the segment back.
It's a good segment. I usually like to do it. Some weeks we have time. Some weeks we don't have time. So.
Well, that's your fault.
Yeah, Drew.
It's 100% your fault, Drew.
Ezra Ginsberg, the National Hockey League.
Drew, you're a dictator.
The National Hockey League should seriously look at abolishing the trapezoid rule and let goaltenders freely play the puck anywhere on the ice.
Drew, you do a great job at hosting. We just give you a hard time. We kid. We love. I had a chance to interview one of my all-time favorite heroes on last Saturday after the Devils game, and that's, of course, Martin Brodeur. And I asked him about the trapezoid rule. I had to ask him about it because he's arguably the best puck-handling goalie of all time, mm-hmm. has a couple of career goals. And I asked him the question, even though it was a little bit not to do with the game, but I thought it was a good question, and he actually smiled, and he answered it. It was a short answer, but he said absolutely, and he said not just for me, but for the safety of the players. And I know that Richie also agrees with this one. And a couple of years ago, the NHL general managers brought this up, and I remember Doug Wilson was one of the guys that wanted the trapezoid rule out. The majority of the general managers in the NHL aren't interested in abolishing the trapezoid rule. Doug Wilson was one of the only ones that I remember. And the reason why, and this is my personal view on the game, don't like the shootouts. And I don't like the trapezoid rule. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of seeing goalies hamstrung by not being able to play the puck. And I know that a guy like Ryan Miller was ran and goalies are run, but hey, that's part of hockey. If you come out and you get hit, it's fair game. Shames me to see a guy like Marty Brodeur, who he might be, in his last year or second last year in the NHL, but it shames me it pains me, I should say, to not see a guy like that be able to play the puck more.
And you know what? Two things on Ezzy's point quickly get to me here. I think Ezzy's right. One is you're limiting his skill set. Why are you limiting his skill set? Guys like Marty.
You should never limit anybody's skill set.
Exactly. Guys like Marty Turco and guys like Marty Brodeur. Second thing, you're going to save concussions and defensemen's longevity. And you talked about that with Brodeur, about Brian Rafalski, and we've talked about that. Brian Rafalski, all the guys who can play the puck, Chris Osgood helping Nicholas Lidstrom and guys like that, because you don't get the huge hits on the boards.
Yeah.
In related news, Ezra's no longer allowed anywhere near Martin Brodeur.
Yeah.
Five.
Richard Pollock. Well, I mean, we talked about it last week, but we have Chuck Fletcher coming out and talking about how the Wild need to do this and the Wild need to do that, and the roster's there. And then I look at this team play this week on TSN, and the roster that they iced is just, I know Koivu's injured, I know they have injury issues, but that roster is horrible. And to think he comes out and says this team is, basically playoff worthy and things like that. I mean, he said that before with Todd Richards. Again, I'm going to get on this. You got to put a good. I know Chuck's working for the future, Ben. He's done a good job accumulating some prospects. But Chuck, look at the roster you're giving Mike Yeo. And Mike Yeo is playing a defensive system as closely as anybody can play a defensive system. So I actually find it ironic that Yeo's playing a system that they wanted out, like with Lemaire, really defensive system. But Yeo probably has no choice because the amount of skill that Chuck Fletcher has put into that roster, healthy or not, but especially when there's an injury or two, is bottom five in the league.
Ezra Ginsberg, the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to need more secondary offense if they're going to be Stanley Cup contenders this spring.
I want to say it right now, and Richie and I both picked the Pittsburgh Penguins to win the Stanley Cup, and I'm going to stick by that. I think the Pittsburgh Penguins can win the Stanley Cup without Sidney Crosby. Right now, Malkin's the MVP of the league, period. And the line of Chris Kunitz, Evgeny Malkin, and James Neal has been unreal, but they're scoring 40% of their goals. The Penguins are going to need guys like Pascal Dupuis, Steve Sullivan, Tyler Kennedy. They're also missing Jordan Staal right now, but they're going to need more offense from those guys to go far. I mean, they're obviously going to make the playoffs, and they're going to be a mid-seed. They're not going to get the one or two seed, probably, but they'll be, you know, probably fourth or fifth, Richie. So that line's been unreal. Malkin, I think, now has 10 points in his last four games. Got the tying goal yesterday. Got the shootout winner. The Penguins have been awesome, but they need more from those guys like Tyler Kennedy, Pascal Dupuis, and Steve Sullivan there. They're going to need some more goals from those guys. You can't have all of your goals coming from one line.
Three.
Richard Pollock, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. Boy, my mouth is full of marbles today. The Toronto Maple
M&M's
Leafs
true, sorry.
Playing style. Yes, the marbles, M&M's, exactly.
Toronto Maple Leafs get a lot of negative press. Now, they get a lot of press, period, and they get a lot of negative feelings, maybe from the fans. But I must say this. If you watch the Leafs enough, the Leafs play, and they've transformed their team a bit to a faster skating team. Obviously, they're poor on the penalty kill, although they've improved in the new year. But their style on offense, I find actually quite appealing. A lot of movement, a lot of skating. Pass, like they have as much movement in their offensive zone, in terms of creating offense in the other team's zone as much as anybody I've seen this year. They move around. They will get the defenseman, their head on a swivel, and they can't keep track. A lot of missed assignments. Credit Ron Wilson. I mean, Ron Wilson certainly has his detractors, and I'm one of them in terms of the team's inability to adapt to play a defensive style and also to kill penalties and things like that. But Ron Wilson's coaching of this team offensively this year should not go overlooked because he's done a great job and they're fun to watch, but they also have been producing.
Two.
Ezra Ginsberg, receiving a pass is one of the most important skills in hockey, but it's rarely discussed and often dismissed as a key factor in a game.
And I know you guys gave me a little bit of flack for this, I played defense when I played hockey. I wasn't a prolific hockey player at all. I played defense, and I love a good pass. And last week, Patrick Eliash, on the winning goal, let a pass go through his legs, and it went to Adam Larson, and that's all anybody wanted to talk about in the Devils' dressing room. Did he have the foresight to see that happening? Mm-hmm. And that's not just about receiving a pass, but that's almost vision on the ice. And
that is vision on the
ice.
And
if you ask people that are in the know about hockey, and all of us are guys that played hockey and watch hockey, and I just think that passing is something that isn't given enough importance as a key skill in the game and a factor in a game. If you watch the Jets this year, a lot of people would agree that the Jets have been kind of Jekyll and Hyde this year. You get a solid effort from the Jets a lot of times this year at home, and then they don't get a good game on the road. And Richie and I coached hockey this year. A clean breakout pass and, more importantly, a good second and third pass in the neutral zone is everything. I mean, you have teams like the Detroit Red Wings and the Vancouver Canucks. Why are they so good? They spend a lot of time in the other team's zone. How do they get there? By making good passes in the neutral zone and keeping that puck.
Keeping the puck in the offensive zone. It's not just firing it down for the tip into the corner to have a forechecker get in there. They actually keep the puck and they can make the plays.
Clean passes, I think, should get a little bit more attention. They're not as easy as you'd expect. And receiving a pass, in the NHL, a stretch pass at full speed is a skill. I mean, it takes an intelligent hockey player to do that on a consistent basis.
It's like that McDonald's commercial that's out right now where they show their...
Drew, why do you have to factor McDonald's into everything? Sorry, I'm hungry? Or?
Well, there's a deal, 50 chicken McNuggets for like $9.99. We could probably go after the game.
I don't think we should go, but they show the kid receiving a pass with an egg is what they do.
I used to practice that in stick handling with an egg. Never worked. I didn't get much gold.
You got an omelet.
But you got an omelet out of it. So exactly. Omelet, yeah. Well worth it. Are you guys looking at pictures of me that are...
That picture of you in the press box with that little cup on your head is hilarious. Dave Minuk took that picture. We're having a good time here.
Alexei Ponikarovsky was traded from the Carolina Hurricanes to the New Jersey Devils late last night. What's the addition for the
Devils?
Well,
why would Carolina go from a pony country to a non-pony country?
Hilarious.
Well, Ezzy sent me an email that said, add pony to the show plan. I'm okay. Like, what pony?
Well, first off, I'm still at heart. I mean, I'm obviously a supporter of the Jets, but at heart, I'm still a Devils fan. And you know what? I've always loved Ponikarovsky.
Hold on, I thought this was my thing.
Oh,
I learned this
sorry,
week.
Sorry, Richie.
Yeah. I had a pony.
Drew threw it to me, Richie. Okay,
yeah, that's my thing. No, but you know, you watch the Devils and their first line went hell. First of all, I like this team. I think they don't get enough credit, and I think they're dangerous right now. Now, the goaltending is obviously a factor. Losing Talander, we'll talk about that next segment. That's a factor. But you look at their offense, Parise, Kovalchuk, and Henrik on their first line. Been dominant. Look at the second line. Doesn't have exactly the speed, but great hockey sense and great work along the boards with Zubris, Sikora, and Eliash. Now, if you get Zajac back, and you can
Clarkson,
throw...
we didn't even mention
well,
Clarkson.
Hold on. This is a lot of
cutting in here.
If you look at their third line and Zajac comes back and they have a third line of Zajac.
Hold on, is this Richie? Is this a chat and cut?
That's a chat and cut. If they have a third line of Zajac, Clarkson, and Ponikarovsky, well then hold on. That's a three line scoring team there. You toss out their fourth line. You can push some guys down to the fourth line. You know the guys like Ryan Carter instead of having guys like Eric Bolton in the lineup. Although that's one center and a winger, but you know that's what my point
your
is.
Point is well taken.
Yeah, and then you have your
guys for goons.
Your defensive guys like Talander, Volchenko, guys who can play solid hockey, you know, younger guys like Fane and Larson, a tough guy like Salvador. If you can get some good goaltending, you're dangerous. I like the way that team's going. It's a cheap acquisition. I like the move by Lou Lamoriello.
It's amazing that we're talking about needing good goaltending in the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, I mean, Marty's like 61.
Yeah, I know. That's the only... It's a little
couple years younger than Drew.
Yeah, a couple years younger. Exactly, a couple years younger than me. Thank you. Why don't we go to break? You guys can make fun of my age on the other side of the break. And,
during the break.
And during the break. We'll all have a good time at it. Maybe take some more bad, unflattering pictures of me. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day, TSN 1290 with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the program. One half an hour left in tonight's show. Following us, Hustler and Lawless, Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. Then Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty have the play-by-play of tonight's Jets-Panthers game that begins at 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy.
Ha!
For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Hate the high course, huh?
You hate the high course, huh? Ha, ha. Dave Coulier is going to be at Rumors next.
It's sold out?
Sold out.
All five shows.
All five shows
well,
for Dave
Coulier.
You
got us tickets, right?
I got you nothing. I got you absolutely nothing. Dave Coulier at Rumors next weekend, I think Thursday.
Is it true that Lori Loughlin's there in 3 weeks?
I'm not 100% sure. And Jody Sweetin's right after Dave Coulier. Show is completely sold out, but tonight they can, I believe there's a few tickets left for tonight's program. So head over there. You can see some great comedy at Rumors all the time.
Drew, we were talking about this on Tuesday with our good friend David Walker. Was it Richie's birthday when we were at Rumors, and Alonzo Bowden was one of their hilarious comics?
Yeah, and I stood up for Drew as I put my hand up as being a friend for Drew, and I got ripped for like 5 minutes straight.
And I remember after,
that was the first and last time you ever admitted
hilarious
to being
guy,
a friend.
Hilarious guy, Drew, as you know from California. I believe he's played Rumors a bunch of times.
Yeah,
and after the
one of my,
I remember
one of my
afterwards,
favorites.
Richie was talking about it. We went back to Richie's house, and he was upset about it again. So funny.
Yeah, he was very funny. Yeah. Alonzo Bowden. He was at the dinner this year.
It's a good time at Rumors.
He was at the Rady dinner, of course. Yeah. Proud sponsor, TSN 1290. Proud sponsor of that dinner.
Oh, Drew, you're a company man.
See like that?
So Mark Messier this year?
Mark Messier this year. Yeah,
Joe Montana last year.
That's right. Mark Messier, I believe. And Michael Landsberg is going to be there.
Yes.
I believe Michael Landsberg
is
the MC.
So, okay. Oh, this is the perfect opportunity. I've been saying this for 2 years. We have to get Richie P on Off the Record. Michael Landsberg is going to be at the Y dinner. I'm going to have a little stop and chat with him. A little chat and cut with Michael Landsberg waiting for my dinner. We're going to get Richie P on OTR.
And in related news, Michael Landsberg has canceled his appearance at the Rady dinner.
Let's get that trending on Twitter right now, because I've been saying that for years, Richie P needs to talk hockey on OTR.
Okay, well, you can...
Drew, you know what? You're not really being very supportive of this idea, Drew. I don't like this. You know what? I'm going to talk to Richie's mom about this. Richie's mom will do something about
it.
Drew, you're not going to do anything. I don't like the motivation that you're showing right now, the excitement. I'm excited. You know, show me a little excitement here.
What kind of excitement do you want me to...
Well,
how about that? They give you a little
bit
of a
fancy
bump.
Boy today.
Yeah, Drew, you're being a little bit of a fancy boy.
Can we talk about trade deadline?
Sure.
It's coming up a little over 5 weeks from now.
What about our trade deadline show?
Oh, well, we're going to be the station, I mean, has a comprehensive day of trade deadline coverage.
Featuring us
between noon and 4. That's right. We'll be on that special Monday edition. Monday, February 27th is the NHL trade deadline.
And we're doing the show outdoors at Portage in Maine.
That's not the case at all, but we will be on from noon to 4. That part is true. You look around the NHL, and as you know, as it always is this is sort of the time of year, right after the All-Star game, is when I think you'll see the trades start heating up.
The rumors swirl.
Yeah. You know, candidates are being bandied about. The Jets actually obviously have a number of candidates we've mentioned a few different times.
Yeah, they have a couple. Let's not get too excited here. I don't think Chevy's going to make too many moves.
I think he should. I would trade a bunch of them, but yeah.
Yeah, I would think he should make a bunch of moves. If you can trade Antropov, you should trade Antropov. If you can trade Oduya,
I don't agree with
Hainsey,
that.
Yeah, trade all of them.
You got to trade them all.
I'm saying that for months now.
Yeah, I think you trade them. The one I really want to talk about, the best player who could potentially be on the market, is Ryan Suter.
Yes, that's the big one. And now there's predictions he might go to Detroit. I saw some say Edmonton. Some say Philly loves him. Such a Philly player. He's an any team player because he's that good. Yeah. And you know what? One thing I got to watch Ryan Suter a little bit more last year, and underrated his offensive ability. Really good puck mover. Mm-hmm. And he plays with Weber, so he gets a little bit overlooked in terms of his offensive skill. But he's an all around number one NHL defenseman.
Ryan Suter is the type. I think we'd agree with this. Ryan Suter is the type of guy. If he goes to a team that needs an excellent defenseman that maybe isn't blessed with that amount of defensemen, such as a Chicago.
Sure.
I mean, Ryan Suter, I mean, he's not going to a team like Chicago. Chicago's already good, even though they'd probably take him. That you're talking about then, that's, you know, we were talking about Elliot Friedman's article earlier.
Yep.
Ryan Suter instantly makes a team better. That can propel your team like a Chris Pronger on Edmonton. Back in 2006.
I always hesitate to compare people to Pronger, but that kind of effect, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where would you see him? I mean, obviously, I mean...
I see Detroit going after him in free agency.
Yeah.
Now, the question is whether he gets to that point. Is there a deal contingent upon him signing an extension? What does his agent think of that? I think that he fits in Philly quite well, because Philly doesn't mind mortgaging. You know, they got a Braden Shen in there. They can toss some players over to Nashville. They can try
to re-up. There's the Pronger void. Speaking of Pronger, there's
absolutely,
a void.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's a mean player, and he's a good... I mean, he fits in. I mean, he fits into every team, Drew, but he'd really be a nice flyer. I don't see why any team really wouldn't be interested. Now, the question is, what will the compensation be? You're looking at probably a first-round pick and a high-end prospect and probably a second-round pick or a middle of prospect, minimum. Now, I know he's a pending UFA, but even so, I think that's what the cost will be. A first-round pick, a top-end prospect, a second-rounder or a middle of prospect, and maybe a veteran to get the money equal.
We talked about this even back in the days of Kick, that Ryan Suter and Shea Weber are the most dominant defensive pairing, and Ryan Suter's nasty on defense. If a team like Philly or the Rangers or somebody like that in the Eastern Conference gets a Ryan Suter, I mean, look out.
What about this? And I know the Devils are bleeding money here. So that's an issue.
Yeah.
The Devils, and if they
ownership,
the
they have ownership problems.
But wouldn't he fit in just right on that team?
Yeah.
But that's the thing. He fits in right.
He's Ryan Suter. He fits in well everywhere. But I mean, you mentioned the Devils, and they need to get better goaltending.
And they don't have really the packages to be able to do that. Yeah. They're not going to trade Henrique in that kind of deal.
Can the Devils go out and acquire a goaltender with Marty Brodeur still on that roster?
No.
It's a good question. It's a really good question, Drew. I think they could. I don't think they will. I mean, I think that Marty would probably be able to stomach it. The question is, you have Hedberg there, and he's not making much money, but they get along really well, Hedberg and Brodeur, from what I've heard.
My personal opinion is...
They go to play Canasta together.
Put it this way, Drew, for all my Devil's knowledge, I just don't see that happening. I think off-season, for sure.
Well, off-season...
Depending on what Marty decides. If Marty wants to play one more year, then
but
maybe
he'd probably
not,
be platooning. Yeah,
even if he does play another year, they've got Scott Wedgwood and Jeff Frazee. Those are the two big goaltending prospects. They've got to go out and get someone. Because, let's be honest, the Devils have a good team here. Young, talented defenseman in Larson. Henrique's developed. You've got Kovalchuk, Parise for now. I mean, the Devils are a team that could make the playoffs for the next several years. It's not a team, even if you lose Parise, it's a team that's this year and next year
Parise
still
be a huge loss,
playoff contender. Agreed.
We spoke about it with David Ebner a little while ago. Vancouver. They have certainly have aspirations of winning the Western Conference again. What do they need on the trade deadline market? They were active on the at the deadline last year.
I don't think they need anything really, Drew. I mean, they probably are going to want to add a depth.
They've already got David Booth,
a depth defenseman, maybe another. You know, another guy who can contribute a little bit offensively, but none of the guys they're going to add are going to be anything substantial, and they don't need it really, Drew. I mean, they're deep. They're deep everywhere. They're deep at goal. They have good, solid defensemen. They're probably going to add a defenseman, Drew. And we'll prepare for this more so when the trade deadline comes.
Oh, of course.
But a defenseman and another guy who can contribute a little bit on offense, but they don't need it. And I don't think Gillis is going to sell. Gillis, from what I've watched him quite closely for some time now, he's not going to sell the farm for any kind of rental.
Right, look at a guy like Cody Hodgson. I mean,
performing better.
He's putting the puck in the net, yeah. and you've got
Kessler's gonna get better.
Hometown boy Dale Weiss chucking the knuckles on the fourth line. Yeah. I mean, I probably
Burrows,
agree. Maybe
Booth
a bottom pairing defenseman and maybe a third liner.
That's right. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
And the Canucks typically
depth, because if you're going to make a long run, especially if you're going to make a long run, you need depth. Yep. You need depth.
What, anybody else that jumps out at you that's going to be a buyer? I mean, you look at the top teams.
Another player that's rumored is Hemsky.
I see him going for sure.
This year it's a little stronger, though.
Yeah, I see he's a goner. I think he's a goner. I don't think there's a question about it.
And he's been terrible this year.
First of all, you're factoring in, you're assuming Steve Tambellini is going to do something based on logic.
Yeah, I mean, this is an easy one for him, though. It's been handed to him. Now, the question is, where do you send him? And, I mean, obviously, L.A. has been speculated quite a while. They matched up last year for the Penner deal. L.A. needs a winger. Need a winger who can skate. Yep. That seems to be a match that would make a lot of sense.
And Richie, our friend Kyle Kozier, who is a huge Oilers fan, he would agree with us. Now everyone's saying, why didn't you trade Hemsky this year? Because his value's gone down. And his value's gone down.
Remember
a couple of years ago when it was all about the Thomas Caberle rumors, and then his play went down and then his stock decreased?
Yep.
Same thing with Alex Hemsky. Now the future of the team is with Nugent Hopkins, Taylor Hall, who's apparently playing tonight, and Jordan Eberle and others. And now Hemsky is kind of the odd man out, and his play's suffered, and now you're going to get less for him. When really, a guy like Alex Hemsky goes to Pittsburgh, that's been another rumor, Hemsky to Pittsburgh. We have no idea if that's going to happen. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. But, I mean, there's your secondary scoring. I mean, a guy like Hemsky goes to Pittsburgh, look out. Again, I can't see him not stepping up his play on a team like Pittsburgh. All of a sudden,
he's got the talent, for sure. I mean, you look at a team like San Jose. We've seen them in person. They need some wing help, third and fourth line wing help. That would help that team. And these teams have needs. I mean, I don't think there's a question about these teams. All teams generally have needs in a cap system, aside from maybe Boston.
Well, Boston has $3.2 million in cap space available to them at the trade deadline.
Drew, Boston, who you picked correctly to win the Stanley Cup last year, I'll never let you forget that. It was
a great
pick. Their roster, with the exception of Mark Recchi, is identical. It hasn't changed. Look up and down Boston's roster.
Well,
they
Mark
didn't
Savard.
Need, and Mark when Savard.
And I, know.
I, mean,
run.
I know.
I mean, Savard and Recchi aside.
They brought in Pouliot. That's
they
did, it.
They, yeah. Talk about a smart general manager. What's not to like about your team? Two great goalies, four good forward lines,
and
great
we had
defense.
Jack Edwards on, maybe add a left-handed center for a pass-off. But if your biggest issue is left-handed center for the power play for a pass-off the half wall, then you're pretty darn good.
$3.2 million. Can you see them making a run at anybody?
I mean, the question is, Drew, where does he fit in? I mean, up the middle, you look at their depth up the middle.
Yeah.
You look at their depth on the wings. I mean, do they maybe want to add another left winger? You got Lucic there. I have the roster right in front of me right now. But, I mean, maybe a left winger just off the top of my head. But
it's a high-class problem for Boston to have.
It's a high-class problem, Drew.
It's a high-class team. I mean, that Eastern Conference, again, Pittsburgh, Philly, Boston, Rangers. I think I can't see the winner not coming out of the East. And I realize the Hawks and the Wings are good, but that Eastern
Conference
is really good.
And you got the Sharks and the Canucks. You got the Sharks and the Canucks.
At the top.
And I don't know, Ezzy. I think that there's a little bit more of a divide this year than in past years. I see a little bit less upsets until those, I think there'll be less upsets coming into the conference semifinals.
There's definitely not going to be any upsets in the East, I don't think.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon.
One seggy to go.
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. We welcome Michael Remus into the studio. I understand I've made a number of different errors today.
Sure. A few. I'm here to correct you guys. There have been a few errors tonight. Just comparing.
Okay, stop, boy.
You guys asked me to come.
No, I'm joking.
Comparing the Jets forwards to Florida forwards, it's actually kind of interesting. The Jets have scored 120 goals in 47 games, Florida 116 in 46 games. So the Jets have actually scored goals at a touch higher goals per game than Florida.
No, but is a defenseman scoring too factored in there?
Oh, it's just total.
Well, Garrison has 13 goals, so they probably have more. Okay,
so total team goals. And then, Drew, you said on November 7th the Jets lost to Florida 4-0. It was actually November 10th, and they lost 5-2.
Wow. That
was
close. And your regulation win, Drew. I mean, Remus, can we grade Drew's stats today? on a A, B, C, D curve?
I'd have to give him D plus.
Ooh.
Oh, the D plus.
The D plus. Like, ooh, pretty bad, but trying to make you feel better
and
about
below
yourself.
A C minus.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that, guys. Let's see. Maybe I can redeem myself in rapid fire. How about that?
Gary would give you an F regardless.
So. Gary would have given me an F before I got on air. I know that's for sure. Let's go to rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Many intriguing candidates have had their names bandied about for the Montreal Canadiens' general manager's job, which, for the record, isn't open at the moment. Assuming Pierre Gauthier gets fired, who would you like to see as the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens?
Richard Pollock. Sam Pollock used to be the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. No relation. I want to see Richie P as the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. He can speak French.
I don't know. He can French kiss. There's a difference there.
I'm not even touching either of those. I would like to see Julien Brisebois be the new GM. He has experience in Montreal. He's worked with Stevie Eiserman in Tampa. He's an up-and-coming guy. He's a new guy. He has experience with Montreal media in terms of being in the organization for a while. He would be my number one choice. Number two, I think that Pierre Maguire would be a good GM. And I think that he can obviously speak French. He knows the game, as people can tell. I think that he is he's more than capable of handling that role. And I think that he would be my number two choice. But Brisebois would be my number one. I like to see the new blood in there.
Very good. Next question in rapid fire. We also assume that Scott Hosen is going to be out in Columbus, which makes the question about why he's going to oversee the team through the trade deadline all the more curious. But assuming Scott Hosen is out, and with Craig Patrick in there as an advisor and the rumors of John Ferguson Jr. being bandied about, who would you like to see as the new general manager in Columbus?
Well, I'd have to say, out of those two, maybe because of the fact that Craig Patrick already has a familiarity there, but one thing's for sure, I mean, the mess in Columbus, it has to be reversed. And I mean, this year, the moves that were made, I mean, at the time, I mean, the James Wisniewski trade, we didn't like
signing,
it. It
was signing.
Pardon
signing.
Me, signing was an overpay. And then the trade bringing Jeff Carter, I mean, we liked a little bit more. But this team has so many issues, and we've talked about this again and again on defense. I mean, this team has never built anything from the draft on their D-core. I mean, Rusty Klesla, is that who your best defenseman is? So whoever does come in there, and Richie knows, I mean, maybe a little bit who would be a better candidate between Patrick and John Ferguson Jr., but whoever comes in there, I mean, you got to start thinking long-term and start building something there, because
there's
too many issues at key positions.
Yeah, they you're exactly right, Ezzy. I mean, for years they thought Klesla was going to be the guy, to get rid of him. They had high hopes for Chris Russell, got rid of him. There's really not much there in terms of defensive depth, and they haven't developed it. I mean, John Moore's a guy that has potential. He's a good skater. He'll be a nice player, but, I mean, there's not many, and they haven't done enough, and it's a mess there. Who I'd like to see? A former guest of our show back when we were on Kick, Paul Fenton, former Winnipeg Jet. He's bided his time in Nashville. He's worked under David Poile, who's a very good general manager. He knows his stuff, and he'd be a heck of a hire. Again, some new blood, and a guy who I think would be a capable hire there and would do a good job.
Next question. All-Star Game head coaches were announced. It's John Tortorella, who's going to coach one team, and Todd Richards, who's going to coach the other.
Todd Richards?
Sorry. Like, not Todd Richards, obviously. He hasn't gotten that good. Sorry. Claude Julien.
Because they're the same.
I know. I mean,
I guess there's no Eastern Western anymore because they have the draft, right?
That's
so
right.
They put Tortorella against Claude Julien.
Yeah. Let me try that again. So it's going to be Claude Julien.
Gary just texted you got D minus, and that was before that mistake.
That one up. Sorry. Claude Julien and John Tortorella. Todd McClellan is going to be coaching with Tortorella.
Okay.
That's where I was going with that. I'm having some troubles today. I don't know what's going on.
You got your wedding on your mind.
Exactly. I must have the wedding
bells.
Wedding bells on the brain. Can you imagine a NHL head coach who's worse suited for the Grip and Grin event that is the All-Star Game than John Tortorella is?
I love the fact that Torts is going to be in there. Huge Torts fan.
I am too.
And it's going to be fun because he'll probably actually, you know, have more fun than even some of the players. Such an animated guy. So good for him. He's done an awesome job with the Rangers this year, and I'm looking forward to, you know, his antics at the All-Star Game.
I think he can take his foot off the pedal a bit and enjoy himself. I think that's a lot of that's a show. I think he's actually not a bad one. I think Claude Julien, he's become a little bit more expressive over the years, so maybe he'll warm up too.
So you're okay with that?
Obviously,
they deserve it.
Well, it's going to be really great when I don't watch the All-Star Game and don't care what they do on the bench.
Seems reasonable. Not a lot of coaching probably involved in the All-Star Game, I'd imagine.
No, Drew. It's called Next Lineup.
Yeah, it's exactly. I mean, I think, yeah, not a lot of coaching going on there. Last question in rapid fire. Things are, and it relates back to what we talked about with Ryan Suter last segment. Things are booming in Nashville. They were playing to full houses, best attendance in the organization's history.
Mm-hmm.
How can David Poile get away with trading Ryan Suter when the fans are jamming the arena in the manner that they are? How do you balance the two out?
Well, the problem is, Drew, is if he won't sign with you, then you can't take the risk that you're going to get nothing in return for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Summer. And his hand is forced, really, by Suter and his agent. If Suter won't re-up and you don't have a guarantee that he will, then you have to trade him. So it's not Poile's fault, really, here. I don't think Poile's the one to blame. I think it's Suter, you know, maybe saying the team can't spend as much money to add forwards to this team, him and Weber and some young guys on defense, that he wants to move along. And if that's the case, you can't blame David Poile for it. He's done a heck of a job in a market that's been difficult. Look at Columbus, on the other hand. Like, it could have happened. Look what has happened.
Yeah, and Pekka-Rinne signed the contract early. And
too much money, but...
And they're going to have to sign Shea Weber coming up. And they've you can't sign all three guys. And I think that he can get away with it. And, you know, I think it should be said that Nashville, even though this year they're having their best attendance figures, always been great fans.
Yeah, fans.
I've always wanted to go down there. It's kind of a place that not a lot of Canadians go, you know, compared to maybe L.A., New York, and stuff like that. But Nashville, you know, Music City. I've always wanted to watch a game there because the fans look like they're always into it. And they've only had a team for 13 years there in the NHL. But
if they make a playoff run this year, it's a quick drive from Kentucky to Nashville.
Really?
A very quick drive. Only
we already have
hours.
Our road trip planned, Drew.
I'm
how
just saying,
much more can we do for you?
If you want to
go to the wedding in Kentucky.
Are Kentucky Fried Chickens open 24 hours a day in Kentucky?
Actually, they have just, Kentucky Fried Water Fountains. It's just a water fountain of chicken.
Is it just called Fried Chicken? No, Kentucky? Because it's not from Kentucky?
I can give you directions to the original home of Colonel Sanders, where
are
they
you
actually
joking?
Are a restaurant still.
Really?
They, yeah.
No.
Claudia Sanders' chicken house of some sort.
Take me out of here.
We're for sure going there.
Claudia Sanders' dinner
house. Take you to the river.
Claudia Sanders' dinner house in Kentucky. You can go there. Let's go to Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, and I assume that we're all cheering the chicken to begin with.
Well, yeah, we're cheering your knowledge of fried chicken, Drew, but nobody had any questions about that. I'm going to jeer the majority of coaching styles seen in the National Hockey League these days. You know, I watched Calgary play Los Angeles on Thursday night, and that was one of the most boring games I've ever seen. You know, you can throw a second forechecker in there once in a while. You can let these guys play a little bit of offense. I know the Siders get by on tough, hard-nosed hockey, but let a little bit of freedom go here, boys, and let some skill be on display, because it's some of these games, I know people are paying big money and they're big Jets fans, but some of these games, in any, they're hard to watch. And there's a lot of skill on the ice that, to me, is being wasted by having these guys play in these terrible systems like the center high and things like that.
Is he?
I'm going to cheer Mark Stewart. I really liked his huge hit on Thursday night, and I like how he dropped the gloves with Cody.
This is what
McCormick.
We call a cheer that wasn't prepared.
I'm a huge. You know what? Just I'm cheering Mark Stewart because he's a tough as nails defenseman.
Fine, we're skipping.
I really don't like you guys. We're not friends anymore.
Good with us. I'm cheering Mark Savard of the Boston Bruins. Yep. He returned to the Boston Garden for the first time earlier today to announce that he purchased a luxury suite in the arena, and it's going for the 2013-2014 season, and he's going to host pediatric patients
from
the Children's Hospital in Boston.
That's great.
For a focus on children suffering from the effects of head trauma.
I always liked him. He is a class act.
So I'm going to cheer Mark Savard for that gesture. That's it for this Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. Big thank you to David Ebner of the Globe and Mail. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. A big thank you to Illegal Curve sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Cheer Bar and Grill, and of course, David Carr of Monopoly Realty. You can get a hold of David at 230-6129. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. And Hustler and Lawless are next. Until next Saturday, this has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290.
your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.